This is Continuum Drag, a podcast where we watch sci-fi, fantasy, and everything in between. This week, Forever Night, Season 3, Episode 15.
This is a prototype, combination virtual reality game and online service. The hardware is uplinked by a digital cell phone to a high-speed mainframe over at Virtual Dimensions Lab. Next generation stuff. Check it out.
Frankly, I prefer reality to computer games.
Yeah, but reality doesn't have vampires. Hang on, Nick.
Welcome to Continuum Drag, the podcast recording a bonus episode for charity. I'm Luke, here with my co-host Jordan. What's real, Adam?
Adam? Oh, because is that the person who donated?
That's the person who made a very generous donation to the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in order to get us to record a bonus episode and, of course, help a charity who really deserves it out. And we're happy to do another episode of your favorite series for sure, Forever Night.
Hold on. We're happy about it?
Aren't you happy, Jordan?
I'm happy there was a donation. But I have, you know, it's tinged with some bitter regret of having to watch another episode of this show. However, it's always interesting when we go back to these shows, especially a show where we escape podded or whatever we say out of the thing. Because you go back, you're like, oh yeah, this show. I remember all these characters. And it's like, there's like a little bit of wistfulness of like, you know, this time, especially when you know you're only having to, you like make a little pit stop. It's like visiting someone you don't like that much, but you don't have to spend like a weekend there. You're just having a quick coffee, you know?
I will say, as I went back to watch it, I was like, oh yeah, remember how crazy the finale of this series was?
I thought the same thing, because we're gonna see some characters and stuff that, like, when we watched the finale, I'm like, who are all these people? And they're just dying because we didn't even get introduced to them. Yeah,
these people are dead. All these people are dead.
Everyone's dead in the show.
Yeah, it was fun to go back after we missed quite a few episodes getting to see, because we missed most of season 3, so we didn't get to really see much other than the final where she died of his new partner who replaced Stanky, Lisa Ryder. So she's here. So that was interesting to see. I believe that might be the actress's name, maybe.
Yeah, it's Tracy Vetter is the character's name.
Yeah, that's the character's name. And then, like, there's the new captain this season who we barely were with was Blue Mankuma, who was just on RoboCop that we're watching. So I was just like, is it in my head canon? I'm just like, oh, after RoboCop, he got promoted to captain. He worked with Forever Night.
It's so funny. The shows, in some ways, really could coexist. Obviously, they're both shot in Toronto, both around the same time. They both have a kind of similar look to them, similar budget. This show actually takes itself, I think has a little bit greater grasp on the tone and what they're trying to do than RoboCop did. But it wouldn't be too hard-pressed, I think, to do a crossover episode.
I mean, it would be great. I'd love to see it.
Mm-hmm, me too. I mean, honestly, Nick, in this episode, I mean, we'll talk about it. He's just such a, like, I don't like being a vampire. I don't like being a cop. And, like, what he needs is RoboCop to be like, you should appreciate the things you have. My wife and kid won't play baseball with me, you know?
Somewhere there's a crime happening.
Yeah. You see, I'm checking your stress levels. They are high.
I'm scanning you. Are you a vampire?
And he's like, is there like a digital ghost in the background? Do not turn your head. She is definitely not there.
Well, Jordan, shall we get into it? Shall we talk about this episode of Forever Night? Get back into the nostalgia of our time with it.
Let me just say my first note under on my piece of paper there is, I can't believe I'm watching the show again.
Well, here's the IMDb summary for season 3, episode 15, The Games Vampires Play. Mm-hmm. Nick is drawn into the intoxicating world of virtual reality.
Okay, Luke, I feel like we've talked about this so many times. If there's a few things writers are obsessed with in the 90s, and it's probably a longer list, but there's two things that got to be on. And one is Hillary Clinton, and the second thing is VR. They love it. There's got to be a VR episode, and there's got to be a reference to Hillary Clinton being like, is she really in charge?
Well, you're good luck because we're getting one of those VR this time.
Yeah.
And You're right. It's classic 90s VR. The opens up on a guy. He's putting a headset on, sunglasses. He's got gloves so he can touch things.
And he says he's the game's designer, and you're right, he's wearing the stuff, but he's also in front of his computer, he's working on it. So he's got like a vampire game he's playing. And how would you describe how it looks? It's sort of like photorealism with like kind of like almost like pencil drawing on the outline sort of thing.
Yeah, look, how they've done it is it's all shot on video, obviously, and they've put a filter over top, but it's very much the filter they used in the, like, what is it, the Take On Me video, but like...
That's right, yeah.
Instead of just doing the black and white, the colors are popping a bit too much. It's kind of got a little bit of a digitally feel, but largely just looks like you're watching a video that someone put some sort of filter over top of.
Yeah, so he's watching this like a seemingly sexy vampire lady, and he like goes to like, I think it's he touches her breast or something. He's like, doesn't quite feel like real breast, and then he has to like adjust it in the computer.
I want to say, the show obviously was supposed to be a sexy show, but there's that moment where she's just like, do you want to touch? And you see him with his like, in real life, reach out. And when they cut to the shot in VR, his like one finger comes down and he like touches her solar plexus, like directly in the middle of her chest. Like, it's not sexual at all. It's like he like touches the middle of her chest on her solar plexus. I was like, well, I mean, you are a sexy vampire show. I think you could have got a little more risque.
Yeah. So he's like, doesn't quite feel right. But so you understand, like, he's creating this very immersive, very realistic, very addictive sort of I can't believe this is real sort of game. And while he's doing that, sort of what you realize is what's happening in real life is being mimicked in the game. So the vampire is sort of like sexily kind of in some sort of erotic way, like attacking him with a knife, sort of like putting it to his neck. Like, isn't this sexy?
Jordan, it's not just a knife, it's her retractable fingernail blade.
I thought it was a knife. I didn't realize it was her fingernail.
She holds up her finger, and then a knife just shoots out of the fingernail. I was just like, okay.
So while she's doing that, someone puts a gun to his neck, and he's basically like, I can feel it. And you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening. And then, of course, he gets killed in real life while he thinks he's in the game.
And the question is, who killed the programmer?
Yeah. Now, I'm going to say something. I was sure, and I'm happy to admit I was wrong. I was sure where this was going to go, and there was going to be a scene where Nick's going to get in the game, and it's so realistic, he doesn't know what he's doing, and he thinks he's in the game, and he's got Natalie or someone in his hands, and in the game, he's supposed to bite her, and he doesn't realize, he thinks he's in the game, and he actually has the person, and then at last minute, he realizes it's actually real, and he doesn't bite the person. I was sure, absolutely sure, that was going to be a scene in this show, and it's not, and I feel a little bit like it was taken away from me.
You felt a little ripped off?
Yeah, I felt ripped off. I didn't get that cliche scene.
But yes, this murder brings vampire cop Nick Knight to the scene with his post-stanky partner, as you said, Detective Tracy Vetter.
Yeah.
And it's revealed at this point, and you could have mentioned it earlier, the sort of the running theme of this episode, and probably I would imagine, because it was a fairly serialized show, that Nick at this stage, he's bored of being a human cop. He's kind of like thinking about running out in this life, starting over again somewhere, maybe even becoming a vampire again.
Yeah. Now, I will say there's a nugget or morsel or something small of an idea that he's been alive for hundreds of years. Yes, obviously you would get bored doing the same thing over and over, and he's had a lifetime of doing certain things. I think there's kind of interesting. However, to watch him mope around is so annoying, because he's just like, it's so annoying. And you're like, Nick, get your head out of your ass. Come on, man. So like, he's not doing his paperwork. She says at the beginning, she's like, you know, I'm doing all the work. And I completely side with Tracy on this, because I've been that person. You're like, you're not going to do anything? Like, but I'm so bored. Are you, Nick? You're so bored. She's already doing the night shifts because of you. Everyone's doing the night shift because you can't be out in the day for some reason. You're complaining. Come on.
I like she tells him about the paperwork and kind of like, could you maybe do some? And he just like doesn't even listen. He's like, what?
He ignores completely.
I'm not listening to your like droning.
and because we haven't seen what their relationship is at all. And all we see is that this poor like long-suffering partner is doing everything. And he's just like, just complaining his way through the shifts.
At any rate, having found the VR set at the scene of the crime, they bring it back to headquarters, and there's a new character. I'm sure it's not a regular character, but like they called her the computer ops detective, gets to work on getting the game system set up.
This is something I love in TV, where you have a couple characters already, and there's a new plot device or something like this. It's something technological. Why they couldn't have just put a line of dialogue and said, oh, you know, Natalie is really handy with this sort of thing, and give it to that character to do more? They're like, let's just introduce a new character. Are you going to give any of the other old characters you've already established any more dialogue or scenes? No, we're just going to bring in a new character. And it's like, guys, sure. So there's another new detective who's going to be a computer whiz.
Listen, none of these other side characters who are regulars in the show, the characters are so deep, so fully drawn, no one would ever believe they know how a computer works.
I know. It's just, literally, it's a line of dialogue. Like, oh, do you know Natalie has been as a hobby of VR? Oh, why don't we bring her in? Even though it's not her expertise. Great. Done.
At any rate, she gets the VR system working, and they're like, Nick, do you want to try it out? And he puts it on his head, and his mind is blown. Like,
yeah,
they have a shot of him putting it on, and his jaw just drops.
It's so funny. The performance, he vacillates between, again, like, I hate being a vampire cop. And then he puts on the VR, and he's like, it's like he's on coke. He's like, ah, VR, ah! And you're like, oh my goodness, he really likes this game.
And Nick likes it so much that, like, when they put it away in the evidence locker,
he acts crazy.
He goes in the evidence locker and just puts it on his head and stands like a crazy person in the middle of the evidence locker, just playing the game.
Now part of this episode has this kind of odd a plot, which is basically like he realizes very early on, because we're gonna see a scene where he watches it, where he goes and he sees this vampire lady again, and she basically says, "Yeah, that's right, I killed the guy. I'm admitting I killed the guy." And we're going to find out really quickly that there's a real person that looks just like her. So he assumes this real person has killed her, because she's admitted in the game. So he has decided the only way to get evidence is to keep playing the game. Fine. But for whatever reason, he acts like a crazy person. So he loses all legitimacy throughout the episode, because he can't just be like, trust me, let me show you this conclusive proof that there's information in this game that we can use. He's like a manic person running around like, gotta put on the VR, and I'm like, I wouldn't trust you either.
Yes, that's just it. In the VR, there's the VR vampire woman.
Yeah,
she is an avatar based on the dead programmer's partner, who Nick now suspects, because the VR avatar admits to the murder. And the vampire also tells him in game that this game is specially adjusted just for him. And if he can win the game, he'll solve the murder. So, yeah, he's obsessed, but no one will believe him. But only because he's acting crazy.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. Now, from her perspective, here's the thing. Yes, she did it. They don't give you any other person who could have done it. It's obviously this lady. So what is her goal other than this, like, cat and mouse game? What is her goal of doing this?
That is explained near the end of it, where her motivation for the murder was, she is addicted to playing video games, but she can't get the same high winning video games anymore. So she wants to commit the perfect murder and then toy with a police officer and beat him, so she wins that game as well. Because the in-game is not enough for her anymore. She can't get that. I believe they refer to the VR as mind candy.
That's
right.
And the
mind candy isn't enough for her anymore.
It's brain candy. That was my original what's real. Brain candy.
It's Kids in the Hall's brain candy.
Well, here's the one real major problem. The perfect crime is killing someone with an ice arrow. So she didn't do that. So that's a mistake. And
everybody knows. Everyone knows
it's an ice arrow because it melts. But yeah, it's so funny that the real problem that Nick has is not that it's so insane that he's solving a crime in the VR. It's that he's acting insane. And he's acting insane because I guess the game is so good. But I shouldn't say that. It is so good. He goes on and he's so stimulated that he keeps becoming a vampire.
Yeah, well, that's just it. In game, he's playing a vampire. And the premise of the game is you kill people to win and you drink their blood to get power. So in game, he has to do those things. And since he himself is a real vampire, it's really getting him going. He's really loving it. He's really enjoying it. So much to the fact that at some point in the episode, and I was so happy to see him, LaCroix, I think his name is, drops by his apartment. He's like, Nick, I brought a wine bottle full of fresh human blood. I know you don't like it, but I brought some. And Nick's like, no, give me some. Give me some. I want it. And yeah, like, and Nick's just like slamming human blood again. Yeah,
he's chugging these bottles through the whole episode. Now, Luke, you're more of a video game guy than I am, and you love VR and all things virtual reality. Let's say this was a game where you play a vampire and you just bite people. Is that a good game? Do you think that's a good game on itself?
I think, I mean, I would try it. I would definitely play it. I don't think there's enough quite, you're right, there's not quite enough game mechanics to this for sure, because it is just like, each level is pretty basic. Like, just, we won't, we'll just kind of talk about them a little bit. Like, mostly the first few episodes or levels are just like stalking someone, drinking their blood.
Yeah.
Later, he just fights people and cuts off their heads. They're pretty dull levels for sure.
Yeah, because that was the thing. Like, and I know they were not going to design a whole game for this, but there is something... there's a little bit of disconnect between how excited he is and how kind of lame the game is. And I understand what they're doing. It's that he's been in these vampire blahs, as they call them. And this is giving him the chance to be a vampire without doing it. So he's getting to, you know, kill people, but he doesn't actually kill people. So he doesn't have to feel guilty about it, but he's obviously getting off on it. Like, I understand. It's actually kind of an interesting concept. It's just that, again, the disconnect is that, the sucking of the blood and everything is so like lame. I'm like, this is what's exciting for you,
Jordan? Didn't you see when he sucks the person's blood, a little blood meter on the bottom of the screen goes
that's
up.
Right, that's right, it goes up. And there's also I like that there's a countdown, and I only clocked it maybe like three quarters of the episode. There he's like, there's only 8 hours remaining. I was like, oh, do you only have a short amount of time to do this for reasons?
Part of the game is anytime he goes into the virtual reality, he's in a location, and what he comes to discover is those locations exist in real life. For instance, I think the first level's at the ROM,
yeah, that's
and
right.
Like, which is the Royal Ontario Museum. What's very funny, he's like, I'm in the Royal Ontario Museum, what's this door? And it's just like, it's that bedroom that's in the Royal Ontario Museum.
I love that. I love that. He's like, you see this, like, if you live in the area, it's a very classic museum, and then he's like, yeah, let's go in this room, and then they go to clearly a set, like a not very good looking set. I'm like, I don't think that's in the museum.
And another level they go to is BC Place, I think it's called. It's like a classic place they shoot a lot of stuff in Toronto, or they used to in this period of time.
Tech War's office was there.
Well, that's it. It's also Bascom's office. So at some point I'm like, oh, he's in Bascom's office in VR.
Could have been another what do you call it, crossover episode.
But the premise here is he sees these levels in the VR, and he realizes if he goes to them in real life, he'll find physical clues. The like IRL clues exist that he needs to gather them all, and that was what the VR lady was hinting to. However, Jordan, I don't know if you clocked this, but I sure did, because Nick Knight has a very specific pronunciation of clues. He's like, I've got to find the clues.
I did not. Now, I would like to watch it again for that, because I enjoy that.
I will tell you this right now, a listener, you'll get a chance to see this too. I did a super cut of him, because I know he's a British actor and he's playing an American accent. His American accent, Canadian accent, whatever it is, it's perfectly fine, with the sole exception of he says it 9 or 10 times this episode. He's just like, you don't understand, I gotta find the clues.
I didn't even track it. I was more like, how did he figure it out that, like, because there wasn't any like information of that there would be real clues. He goes into the game playing, and then he's like, huh, there's a skull over there. That must be a clue. I was like, what? How did he put that together? I guess he's a detective. I'm not.
Oh, yeah. That's just it. I think he just sees something in the game, and for some reason he knows to go there in real life. When he looks in a closet, he's like, hey, that's the thing I saw. And he's like, I got a real life clue now. But at any rate, the woman who he suspects of murder has an airtight alibi for that night. She was on the internet.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and you can see it's like early days, because like, well, she was on the internet, so that means she was at home sitting on her computer dialed in, so she was on the internet, so there you go, she couldn't have done it.
And the new computer detective they have hired for this episode, she's noticed something odd about the game, is that after every playthrough the game deletes itself and rebuilds itself, so that whatever's happening now that Nick's doing, it'll be gone if he doesn't solve it within this 12-hour window. So if he doesn't find these clues, he's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it's like self-refreshing for some reason. So it's like it's clearing the path behind itself. So for
yeah,
because of this case, but more importantly, he's acting insane.
Yeah, absolutely. And so over the course, he'll do like 5 or 8 levels of this thing. And like sometimes, like at the beginning, he goes to like the museum, and he goes to like the famous mall. And then as levels go on, they become more and more generic. It's like warehouse.
Yeah, yeah. Like power basement.
And I'm just like, well, how is he finding these places to find the real life clues now? It's impossible.
Well, I love that you keep doing that. But I thought the exact same thing. Where you're like, oh, that's like an actual distinctive thing. But like, it's not like he suddenly goes to the Sky Dome or the CN Tower or the Roundabout or Honest Ed's or something. It's just like, he's like, I'm in generic basement. You're like, oh, and he just knew where that was? You're like, yes, doesn't matter. He's going to find a skull.
It was just very funny, yeah, that they like... They set off being like their real life location. They used a few like actual places that looked very distinct. So you'd have to go to find them. I do like when he goes to the mall to find it, the second clue, he just puts on the VR and you see him playing the game in the actual, like in the game, he's wandering around the space he was just standing in, but you know, it's virtual now. But it's like, there's a cut of this where there's just a madman in a VR goggles just wandering through a crowd waving his hands right now.
Well, that's funny because you do see a shot later on. I think he's at Bascom's office and he's just like, he clearly has been walking around doing stuff. But in the virtual, he's just standing there. And I was like, are we led to believe that he's moving, but he's not actually moving? Because I thought he would be walking around.
Oh, I think he was. I think it was because in game, when he's in that space, it's a mall in reality. In game, he walks up and stands in front of an escalator as people get, as a woman gets off and he attacks her. And I was like, so in IRL right now, Nick is standing in front of a busy escalator, waving his arms around with these goggles on. And people are like trying to push past him.
I do like at one point though, when you find out like as he's like stimulated by the game, he becomes a vampire and he takes off his mask. He's like, oh no, I'm a vampire. And then he like turns his face away. I'm like, everyone would be seeing you. Like they do a thing. Like
you've been wandering around like this for like 20 minutes.
Like a vampire. One last note about the VR, and it's not important at all except to me, is that he's wearing a very bright fuchsia button-down shirt.
Oh, I did notice that. His in-game character has that very – I assume he customized his character at the beginning. That's why he wanted that dress. Yeah. He wanted to dress like that.
It's like a couple too many buttons open. I'm like, well done, Nick.
Anyway, after like four or five levels, he's found all the clues, and they amount to – I've written them all down here. Silver skull, label from a blood clinic – hourglass, a stick, a noose, and a jackknife. He goes to the final level, and the VR vampire shows up, and she's like, you've got all the clues now. Can you solve it? And he like calls up the priest, and he's like, the clues, I think they're an anagram. And they're like, all right, great. We're going to open up this special anagram decoding program created for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police specially to decode anagrams. And I was just like, did the RCMP fight the Riddler at some point? Why would they have this?
I know. I thought the same thing. I'm like, hold on. They're putting taxpayers' dollars into into this anagram program? It sounds like they just want to like solve puzzles. But anyways.
I love that Detective Tracy, the computer tech, and the captain sit down at that computer like, let's punch them in this computer and solve this anagram. And they appear to be there for, you know, 6 to 9 hours as the computer runs processes. I mean, they cut back to Nick, and Nick's just like, solved it. And he just walks away.
Well, here's the thing about the anagram. I don't know if it made sense because it seemed like he pulled a specific letter for each of the clues. It wasn't like he took the whole word jackknife, right? And he didn't take the whole word skull. He took a letter from each of them. How did he decide what letter to take?
That is explained in every time they cut back, because Nick immediately solves it and he leaves. Yeah. And then they keep cutting back to the pleuristan as they keep trying different things in the algorithm thing. And they finally solve it because the beginning, they're just like, what letter should we use in the anagram thing? Let's try the last letter. And when you cut back to the last time, the captain's like, what if we use the first letter of every word? And they're like, there we go. It's spelled St. Nick. So I'm just like, oh, my God, you guys. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So anyways, he solves it real quick and he knows where he's supposed to go, which is this church where he's going to solve the crime and or get the final piece of the puzzle.
Yes, yes. He goes there. He goes in the church. It's great because that's one of the great things about Trevor Knight when they rarely do it. Not that they rarely do it, but like I haven't seen it in a long time. But he arrives just as the sun's coming up. So he has to run through the sun. So he's smoking and then he runs in the church. He's just like billowing smoke. I'm like, oh, I forgot how he does that.
Well, there was another thing I thought at this scene because we're watching it. And Jamie says to me, like, is he going to light on fire? And I was like, oh, let's see. And then he does, right? He's got his cloak. And then he gets into the church and then we're like, is he allowed in a church? Shouldn't he have some sort of effect going in there? But it's like, no. The church is fine.
I guess in this mythology, churches are okay. And he's also like allowed to enter people's homes without being invited. You know, they're picking and choosing their vampire rules, I guess.
Right. So he's okay. He goes to church on Sunday, but he gets there and he puts on, I thought it was interesting, he puts on the VR set because it seems like he didn't need it at this point. Like he's got to the end, but he's like, no, I got to put on the headset.
Well, I think the thought is he needs to put it on to get the final, because he has to go to the real life places to get the clues. But yeah, he puts it on, the VR vampire appears and just like, you did it. You've come to the final stage. And then we cut to in real life. And of course, the woman who he suspected all along, she's there. She's in the same spot as the VR vampire. She's also wearing VR gear, except she didn't cover one of her eyes. Her VR goggles allows one eye to see the real life.
Well, so there you go. So she's figured it out. She's like, I'm going to be aware.
Advantage her.
I'm not going to look like a fool walking around a mall. She's she's going to be fine with that one eye.
And in game, the vampire avatar shoots Nick with a crossbow, while IRL, the real killer, shoots him with a gun at the same time. She takes it off, and this is kind of where it's revealed, like it's part of her thing. She's like, I did it, I won.
She doesn't shoot him. She shoots him like 10 times, which I liked. She just keeps shooting. And I actually thought at this point, she just keeps shooting him. I was like, oh, this is actually handy that he's a vampire. This is one of the few times it's handy he's a vampire.
But that's just it. She's so pleased with herself. She's outwitted Nick. She's outwitted the police. She's won the ultimate game. And as she's like, you know, standing, being really proud of herself, getting a minute to like leisure in her win, she does not realize Nick is also an IRL vampire. So he just gets up, goes full vampire mode, and just like, I'm a vampire. I'm going to kill you now. And of course, this is his big moment to choose. He's like, should he drink her blood? Should he go full vampire? Mm-hmm. He pulls back. He glamours her and says, forget everything you just saw in the last 5 minutes. You're under arrest.
Yeah, yeah. And they lock her up. And then they do what I think they did in these episodes. And correct me if I'm wrong, Luke, because you might remember. They just like sort of like a recap back at his apartment. And like Natalie is there with him. And they're like, anyways, let's put this pleasantness behind us.
Yeah, yeah, that's just it. It kind of goes back. We get a little bit of a recap of what Nick's emotional state is. And we didn't really talk about it, but you mentioned her a few times. But it's this lovesick pathologist who works at the police station, and Natalie Lambert, I believe her name is. She wasn't much in this episode. She's kind of in the corners, but she's always showing up. She wants Nick to love her. It's unclear to me throughout the series of what exactly she wants.
Yeah.
She shows up, and she's sort of mad at him for like giving into his vampire needs in VR. And he's brought the VR home with him, and she's like, are you going to use that anymore? And he's just like, I don't know. So she takes the VR and throws it into the fire in his fireplace. And I was just like, you guys, those fumes are going to be so bad for you. You can't just throw electronics in a fireplace.
Well, I had another thought about the end of the case, which is, so Nick is trying to prove that this woman murdered her partner, and he's doing through it virtually through this game. If her plan had worked out, that she's doing this cat and mouse game because she gets the kicks out of it, and she killed Nick at the end, don't you think she would have implicated herself in some way? Because the police would have then said, well, he was investigating this woman and then ends up dead. Don't you think she sort of like blew her own chance by killing him?
No evidence, man. She's the perfect crime. The game deleted itself as he finished.
Luke, don't make me say it again. There's only one perfect crime, and it's called Ice Arrow.
Well, we'll never know, because Nick was a vampire all along.
Yeah, he trumped her. She didn't realize in the vampire game she was toying with a real vampire. So
that's the real irony of it, if you think about it.
It is. It's also the moral. It's the moral of the story.
Well, Jordan, that's it. That's the episode of Forever Night. Honestly, happy to be back. I love that it was a VR episode. So funny. So, like, the most science fiction episode in Forever Night.
It is funny to see a more modern technology handled from obviously an older perspective. Again, we've seen it at least a three times or so in some of these shows. It's funny how it clearly was part of the culture, the consciousness in the culture at the time about this upcoming technology and maybe the morality around it. It's not so much what they want to do in this episode, but it's fun to see them do it. This is everything you like and don't like about this show, let me tell you.
Well, Jordan, on that note, do you want to rate the games vampires play?
Yeah, I'll just go right down the middle. I mean, it was kind of fun to see these characters again, but I don't really like this show very much. It's kind of fun to see this. It's almost like you're like, oh, this old band I used to like put out a new song. Let's hear it. But then you're like, oh, it's not very good. 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. I'm going to give it a point for the title, The Games Vampires Play, and the reveal that those games are VR. Very funny to me. I think I enjoy just how campy it was seeing 90s VR. Like, that was very silly. How they chose to execute it on a very low budget, also very silly. We didn't really get into it, but like, it really was about like bright neon colors and that kind of like somewhat drawn, somewhat animated look. Because there's a point midway through where he gets in a fight with someone. He's fighting someone with like a neon green sword, and he's got like a neon red pipe, and he like knocks the guy's head off with it. I'm just like, this is crazy.
Do you think everyone just read Michael Crichton's Disclosure and went crazy with VR?
Yeah, I think VR, that was it. Everyone was ready for it. It was coming any minute. They knew what the headsets would look like. They had the what was the Game Boy version? The VR Boy or whatever it was.
Oh, well, they had the glove thing, you mean?
Oh no, they had the Power Glove, but Nintendo released a Virtual Boy. That's what it was called, and it was like, it wasn't a headset you could strap to your head, but it was a headset that you put on a table and you stuck your eyes into, and it was just like it was just red and blue. That was the only two colors in it.
Right.
Huge flop.
I guess, yeah, sometimes you got to swing for the fences, you know?
But I'm going to say, you're right. It's fun to see the old gang back together. I miss Stanky. That's not great. Yeah. He was a real strong point to the episode. But it was such a silly episode with the VR element to it and like the anagram and like the Artemis anagram machine. I'm going to go 7. I'm going to give it a 7.
7 out of 10, huh?
I had a fun time. But I always did Forever Night. That was always our problem with Forever Night. Is for whatever reason, something about the tone of this show, it knows what it wants to be, and it just hits that like, I'm a sad vampire. It hits it so hard.
And that's the funny thing. I forgot about the show. When I started watching, I'm like, why is Nick like this? And I was like, oh right, he's just a drag. He's a drag all the time. He's like, I'm a vampire. It's like, oh, shut up. Just drink the bottle. I take the ball and shove it. I'm going to just drink it and shut up.
I could have used more LaCroix for sure. He was always a highlight, and he only got one little scene.
Yeah, just sitting on a couch.
At any rate, I think that wraps it up. I think we've covered this wonderful return to Forever Night.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to thank Adam for the donation to CAMH. Very nice of you to do that. Happy to watch a show on behalf of a charity. And if you, the listener at home, are like, hey, how do I get one of these bonus episodes? We've got information on our website, continuumdrag.podbean.com. And on our social media, there's links in our bios there. But essentially, you do a donation to charity, send us the receipt, and let us know what episode of a show we've watched before. Honestly, we'll watch anything now. It doesn't matter. We don't care. Just, you know, make the donation worthwhile so so Jordan doesn't feel so sad after he has to watch another episode of Forever Night.
Well, you could pick something else. Like, you could pick anything, any other show, anything. It doesn't have to be Forever Night, is all I'm saying.
Of course, if you have any questions about bonus episodes for charity, you can always email us, continuumdrag@gmail.com. We'll let you know if we can even find the thing you want us to watch maybe before you do your donation. I mean, maybe just do your donation anyway. It's nice to give to charity, but that's a way to talk to us about this. And on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And also Facebook, I guess.
Yeah.
We will have clips from Forever Night. You'll get to join us on a return to Forever Night for like, I guess, 1 week. I don't know how long we'll be putting them up, but however many clips, lots of VR, him in that pink shirt, mostly VR.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be at least one scene where he becomes a vampire. Like, that's what people like.
Oh, his little teeth coming out?
Yeah, little teeth coming out.
Orange eyes or yellow eyes. You can find that at Continuum Drag's the handle on all that social media. Adam, thank you again for the donation. Listener, thanks for joining us on this return to Forever Night. And Jordan, I'll see you on the next episode.
I'll see you then.
Can't get enough Continuum Drag? Commission a bonus episode for charity.
Want us to watch an episode we missed after using the escape pod or during a best of run? No problem.
Is there an episode of a series we've never watched or a TV movie you want us to cover? You got it.
Wish we'd comment on your favorite movie, content, or other weird media? Sure, why not?
All you have to do is make a donation to one of the charities selected by past guests on our website.
We suggest a donation of $50 per television hour of content we're watching, but everyone's means are different, so give what you can.
Get all the details about bonus episodes for charity on our website, continuumdrag.podbean.com, or follow the links in our social media profiles.
Continuum Drag is recorded in Ontario, Canada, and Seoul, South Korea. Theme music by James Rick Seidler. Produced by Jordan Dulick and Luke Black. Special thanks to Aaron Hughes.